Doc Leipzig, the oldest festival for animation and documentary in the world, is happening in a hybrid format in 2020. We're embracing the opportunities that come along with it. Welcome to the new Doc Industry Program podcast, realized in collaboration with What's Up with Docs, the Programmers of Color Collective, and independent film industry curator Temba Bieber. Welcome to a series of discussions on subjects such as story sovereignty, diversity and inclusion in the documentary industry, and decolonizing our industry in general. These podcasts are funded by Creative Europe, the City of Leipzig, the BKM, and MDM. We thank our partners and supporters for their contributions. Enjoy.
In response to decades of discriminatory film school curriculums that exclude the work and ignore the accomplishments of Black, Indigenous, and people of color filmmakers, the Programmers of the Color Collective proposed a solution. This global group of Black, Indigenous, and people of color film curators share their knowledge of overlooked and underrepresented cinema, pitching the syllabuses they wish existed. This unique four-part series, with great support from Lucy, encourages you to kickstart your own independent study from home. The Programmer of Color Collective organization aims to stimulate conversation around the underrepresentation of people of color within film programming and act as a catalyst for transformative change towards a more inclusive international programming pool. This podcast is commissioned and hosted by Doc Leipzig, the oldest festival for documentary and animation, with a rich and storied history that celebrates film and promotes faith. So my name is Chioma Onyenwe. I'm the artistic director for the Africa International Film Festival based in Lagos, Nigeria, and I've been programming for AFRIF and other international film festivals for over 7 years. I'm also a filmmaker. I'd like to introduce my guest for the podcast today, Thursda Hill. She's a manager at STEPS, a media for social change nonprofit organization. She has worked on the award-winning Steps for the Future, Why Democracy, and Why Poverty documentary projects over the past 20 years. She's the acquisitions manager and curates the free-to-view AfriDoc online documentary platform since 2014. She's a Ladima Foundation board member and has participated in various film festival juries and selection panels.
Hi.
Welcome, Thursda.
Thank you.
So why are we here? So our podcast today is called Africa is a Continent. God damn it. because we're always kind of correcting the fact that Africa is not a country. But in so many ways that we're different, we're also so similar. So the documentaries that I've made across the continent still kind of represents, like, I think every country would still watch it, but like, that might be us, you know, even politically, economically. So there's still so many kind of variants that run across the continent. Africa is both an old woman and a baby. So I guess a lot of the countries on the continent are probably as old as Doc Leipzig. It's probably about 60 years old in terms of attaining independence. And, you know, historically, I guess the idea is like a lot of the documentaries that are made about Africa has not been made by Africans. So in the past, in more recent times, the past 10, 15 years, there are more documentaries kind of coming out that have been made for Africa by Africans. So Thursda, like, what are your thoughts like on that? Like, have you seen like a change in the documentaries in the landscape of the past 10, 15 years? Has it been since you've been working on documentaries with Africans now telling their own stories?
I mean, I think that's actually starting to change in the very recent past. That change has started to happen. When I'm curating for AfriDocs, it still is hard to find films about Africa made by Africans. That's changing. And I mean, there are lots of reasons for why that happens. But a large part of the body of work that's out there about Africa is still made by European and American filmmakers. I think largely because it's an issue of resources. And I think what's sparking the change is that there's a lot more conversation about film happening on the continent, a lot more networking, a lot more looking at identity and wanting to tell our own stories. I think that's a topic that happens, that takes place all over at all of the festivals, at all of the markets, at all of the panels that I've certainly been on. So I think that's a positive change, and I'm just always excited to find films that have an African, an authentic African voice, because I think the perspective is important and tells a completely different story.
Definitely. Yes, I think it's, I agree completely. Going to basic, so now for the, I think for the rest of the podcast, we're going to be made, we're going to be kind of talking about the films that have been made in the past decade. Like I said, it's still relatively new. Not mm-hmm. a lot of the films have been out, made by African filmmakers, so we want to highlight them. And starting with kind of, I guess, the theme about, the themes around like nation, national identity, mm-hmm. And nations being reborn. I guess the, politically, when you think about it, a lot of the countries in Africa were not, they didn't come together on their own. So that identity had never been fully developed. Like, why are we a country? Why are we a nation? As opposed to being, you know, lines drawn by either maybe colonial masters or, you know, so, and we are still grappling with that identity and with that nationality across the continent in so many different countries. And that has also kind of sparked like lots of conversations from filmmakers in terms of what is this, why are we Egyptians? Why are we from Sudan? Why are we Nigerians? What makes us Nigerian? You know, outside of language and culture and religion, you know, what is the thing that binds us together? So starting, I guess, with this is a film that was very, very interesting, a very interesting kind of take. Because it was shot during a civil war, Beats of the Antonov by Hajuj Kuka from Sudan in 2014. So basically, Sudan was in a state of, has been in a constant state of civil war since they achieved independence. And on the border, there's people called in the Blue Nile and, that live in the Nuba Mountains, and they're in the crux of that civil war. But Beats of the Antonov had a very refreshing take to showcasing Africa at war, you know, because it was about music and it was about how, you know, it was so upbeat and lively, and it was about community. And that's, I guess, that's very key in telling that story, because it's not about the war. It's not about the destruction. It's not about, like, you know, the lives that are being lost. So it didn't take that, you know, journalistic view. But instead, it kind of went deep into the film. How did you feel when you saw it? And where were you? Where did you see it?
We licensed it for Afridox. And the first time I saw it, I think, was just watching a preview link. And I think what, just to touch on what you just said now, I think what's great about this film is that it is inspiring, and it talks about the realities of war, sure, and that comes across in many documentaries about the continent. There's not much you can talk about Africa if you don't sort of include things like war and civil unrest. And that in many ways becomes the picture people have of Africa. And so I think for a documentary filmmaker, it must be such a challenge to tell the story of where you're from, but not to focus on the negativity, because I mean, you know, we know, we live on this continent, we know what everybody's able to do, what the capabilities are, we're innovative, we can create, we can connect through music like people do in this film. And I think what this film also highlights is that there is strength in our diversity. So, you know, we may be from different tribes, we may be different races, we may come from different parts of the continent, but we all have that thing that you were talking about earlier, all these differences, but there's that common thread that binds us across the continent. So this is one of my favorite kinds of documentaries, in that there's the reality, there's the sort of doom and gloom and the seemingly insurmountable issues that we have to deal with on the continent. But there's also this light and this energy and this sort of passion to try and overcome that and to make something of ourselves. So, I mean, you couldn't ask for more in a film. It just has all the
It ticks all the boxes.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And that's actually number one on the list. Well, but this list is in no particular order.
Cool.
So, but yes, perfectly done. And I think, and that's really why it's necessary, you know, filmmakers to be able to give dignity to their stories. And even as music is the main feature and it pulls the community together, it shows resilience, of even while the communities are oppressed and this, but there's so much more, and these kind of demonstrates all of that in terms of identity, hope for the future, and even amongst the German people. So that's a fantastic film that you should check out. So going down, so still on kind of like that whole kind of national identity, I think one of the more popular films that was made was called The Square by Dihan Nujain, and it was big. I guess it was like a Egyptian American documentary about, the Arab Spring, picking up from Egypt, and he went on to be nominated for awards. But the film I want to highlight, so that's available to see, but also going. But the film I want to spotlight today is Amal by Mohamed Siam, and it also kind of kicks off right at the square. But instead, it follows Amal, and this is a teenager who was growing up in post-revolution Egypt. And so as Egypt is changing, she's changing, and she's searching. So it's also like that search for identity and her place within this community and within Egypt, which is a patriarchy. And then basically, so it's a coming-of-age story of Amal, and it runs through 5 years, so kicking off in 2012, and the filmmaker touches base with Amal, and at the beginning, she's right at the heart of the protest. She's dragged by her hair, her hair even kind of pulls out of her socket, and she's feisty, and she's full of fire, and she wants to take down the government. But then she starts to, as time goes on, she starts to maybe even conform. And it's just an interesting way to like take a story about, this big news item, but then follow it through the eyes of one person. And I think that style, that way was very good. I don't know if you've heard, Mohammed.
I do.
This is not his first film. But he's made some really, really interesting films. He had another one called Whose Country, which was his first feature. So yeah, but it's basically a coming of age story. As the country is finding her voice, Amal is also finding her voice. And over time, we see her, from the beginning, her hair is not covered. She's a tomboy. And at the end, she's thinking, can I change the system from outside, or do I just join? And now she's, she's covered, and she's going back to focus on her studies, and she even wants to become a police officer. So it's a very kind of interesting, nuanced documentary, Amal, that's also want to highlight for everybody to take a look at. And then moving on, actually, because we're still talking about like that whole coming of age of a nation, coming of age through a personal story. And then we're talking about Finding Sally by Tamara Dawit. And thank you, because you recommended, I hadn't seen that until you mentioned it, but it was on my to watch list, yes. Theresa. And it's such a beautiful film. It was maybe, I think it came out this year in 2020.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible story of a woman who becomes a communist rebel with the Ethiopian People Revolutionary Party. She gets caught up in the country's revolutionary fervor. And after 40 years after her disappearance, this is Sally, her niece, Tamara, kind of pieces together the life of her auntie by coming back to Ethiopia and almost in some ways walking in her shoes, by finding love and also like, getting more in love with the nation as well. So, yeah, so Thurston, can you talk about where did you, How did you come across that film? And thanks again for making me watch it. It's fantastic. Sure. I really enjoyed it.
I met Tamara in Berlin at the Berlinale, and so I heard about the film, but I was helping with the selection for the Durban International Film Festival and for Encounters, and the film was on both programs. And I mean, I think there's a quote, I'm not sure if this is accurate, but it's by Werner Herzog, and he says, the most important aspect of documentary filmmaking is casting. And I think that in all of the films that we've just mentioned now, the characters, the protagonists, the people that the story follows are just so incredible. It almost feels like you're watching a fiction film. That somebody's cast these people because, you know, they're the perfect characters for this role. And actually, it's these true stories. So this Finding Sally is one of my favorites from 2020. And I've watched a lot of films this year. I mean, in lockdown, it's basically most of what I've been doing. And I like the fact that it's a very personal journey. Like you say, Tamara's pretty much walking in her aunt's shoes. And I think the journey of the film is in many ways Tamara exploring her identity as much as trying to piece together the story of her aunt and her family. So I think it's a story of personal history, but also of Ethiopian history. So it's fascinating on many levels. It's educational, you know, I didn't know that much about Ethiopian politics and history, and so it was an eye into a new country that I didn't know that much about and its history, and then also just sort of connecting to Tamara on her journey of trying to find what her family is about, who she is, and who this incredible aunt is. I found it incredible, such a sort of poetic, gentle story that you just go along. And at the end of it all, I sort of like, I can't wait to see Tamara again. I want to take her out for coffee so I can find out more about her fascinating family. It's just a film that's really stayed with me.
And it felt like as she was going on that journey, she was also kind of waking up other members of her family.
Yes. Because,
you know, there's so much unresolved questions. There's so many, they hadn't dealt with it. They hadn't, and she was forcing them to, as well. So it was very well done. And what is it about? I think what is it about women as subjects? Then are they just like more compelling, or you know, are they just like, do they just tend to carry the world on their shoulders, or you know, like what is it?
I must say that I'm guilty of sort of like zoning in on these female led films, and I have to have other people on my team selecting films for Afrodux. Otherwise, we would just have films about women. It's I don't know what it is. It's something that interests me more. I think it's the complexity of the life of these women and the stories they have to tell and the many different things they're sort of juggling. It's just. I don't know, maybe we'll come across some men in our films.
That's the thing, because we're moving on to like the next section, which is also more about women. So
that's okay.
I don't know if okay, I'm sure there's like one about it, you know, we'll get into it, but I guess because also I guess nations are actually also seen as female. So when you think of a country, you're also thinking of, you know, a country as the woman, and then women just kind of navigating so much differently as well. But yes, so Finding Sally by Tamara Dawit is basically really, really beautiful. And then the, you know, the archival footage as well, you know, the photography, that was really, really, really well done, and her family life was so intertwined with the country, so it was the perfect casting, as you say, with that film. So going into more kind of like women, made by women as well, And I guess that's a great thing about this list too, that, you know, there are a lot of films, I think it's probably about 50-50. I have maybe 50, even more, maybe 60% female filmmakers on this list.
Yeah.
So it's not hard, you know. they're there, and they're so you know, they're very kind of very well done, very textured. So going along those lines, actually, so the next film I'd like to highlight, showcase for you to go to see is called In Search, by Beryl Magoko and Joe Katinga Krama. So it's a Kenyan-German documentary made in 2018. As a young girl growing up in a rural village in Kenya, Beryl thought that all women in the world have to be circumcised by going through female genital mutilation at a young age. Therefore, she went through the ritual at a tender age as a rite of passage. And she didn't know about the effects of FGM, as we call it, female genital mutilation. Many years later, she learns about the rather new reconstructive surgery that promises to give back what was lost. In her author-driven documentary, she explores the emotional dilemma by talking to other women who went through similar experiences. Beryl is trying to find out whether she should undergo this surgery, a journey into the unknown for the second time. Will I be making a terrible mistake? Am I ready to face my trauma? Are the questions that drive this authentic and emotional quest into the very self of a young woman.
This is heavy stuff.
Yes. This was a really heavy documentary, and of course the filmmaker is in this film and driving this film, so which kind of makes it double, because
yes,
it's her story as well. And it's, you know, it's interesting that till this day, you know, there's still FGM, and you know, there's still cutting going on across the continent. And so many countries, I know in Nigeria, in Kenya. So this was this film came to the festival. It won Best Documentary at the Africa International Film Festival last year. So it was a very heavy moment. I remember the screening during the festival, and it was heavy. So what did you think about? Did you meet with Beryl? I know it's also an AfriDoc.
Yes, I haven't met her, no, but the issue is obviously an important one on the continent, and we've had some other films about female genital mutilation before, and I've watched a number of others that are not on the AfriDocs platform, and this film I think is important in that it deals with this very important issue. It's something that a lot of people can relate to, but I think the treatment of it is different. I think it's because it's Beryl's intimate journey. It's her quest for finding answers and exploring what she ultimately wants to do about this reconstructive surgery through talking to people that have experienced female genital mutilation and then also the reconstructive surgery. It's just such an intimate look into something that, I'm going to say intimate again, that is such an intimate thing. So I think even though this hasn't happened to me, I can only imagine what it must be like to have to revisit this sort of trauma, like she questions about having to have surgery and to confront, you know, all the things that she's been led to believe. It's fascinating. I think it's a very important film for particularly women on the continent to watch, but I think more importantly to discuss, to engage with the issues and to try and find some sort of dignity in trying to figure out what each individual wants to do about this. Yeah, it's one of the more somber films on the list, I think.
But it's the great thing about it is it's also kind of solution driven.
Yeah.
So it doesn't kind of like dwell. even though there are points where, you know, she talked about feeling more guilt because she went herself.
Yes.
So, which is, you know, at a different point where, you know, you're too small and you're kind of like being dragged to do it. So having to have that, so which kind of made it even more stronger that she was going herself to find the solution to the cutting, and that there is a solution, you know, that there's, you know, there's reconstructive surgery. And it's how accessible it is at this point. I guess with time it will continue to be more, but it's just it's quite heavy,
but also empowering.
Yeah
to make your own decision about how to move forward, you know, if perhaps this happened to you without your consent, or in Beryl's case without actually fully knowing what she was doing. But there's an empowerment in, you know, sort of re-looking at the situation and making a decision about what can I do for myself.
Yeah, and you know, I guess like even with the woman who had done the surgery as well, the woman in the hospital, I thought she was just happy. Like, you know, you can show me on the camera, like I'm here. I've done it. I'm happy to talk about it. Like, I'm going to go and get my life now. And whereas like a lot of the interviews were more kind of like hidden, and people didn't want to kind of show some of the interviews, people didn't want to show their faces. But you know, I found that so interesting, you know, that liberation of like,
yes,
owning your owning the solution as well. So yes, so that's the very yet empowering documentary.
Yeah.
And then we move on to Wagga Girls. Wagga Girls by Theresa Traore Dalberg, from Burkina Faso. Wagga Girls. So it's a group of young women from Ouagadougou study at a girls' school to become auto mechanics. The classmates become the force of safety, joy, and sisterhood, all while going through life-changing transitions into becoming adults in a country boiling with political changes. So,
yeah,
this was such a fun, like, you know, how it even starts with like the, you know, with the bikes, yeah. With the motorcycles. It's like, is this like a Western? It felt like you had some elements of being like a Western, you know, the girls all felt like superheroes, you know, how they were presented. And it's such a fun documentary, and seeing like young women, you know, there's this girl in the documentary and they ask her about her boyfriend and how he would take her, you know, being a mechanic, and she said something like, you know, I've been doing this thing for 4 years, so it's not 4 days, like, don't come and waste my time, man. so it's very empowering,
take
on that.
This is also, it's the one of my all-time favorites. I just like it's such a simple story almost. It's just these young women together trying to become mechanics, but you learn so much about them, about each of their lives, and then, you know, it's like there's a camaraderie amongst the women. They speak about their domestic issues, their boyfriends. It's a great way. It's what you were saying about Amal, where there are these characters, or in the case of Amal, this one character, where you get to follow their story, and the backdrop of their story is kind of what's going on in the country. And so it's a subtle way of showing that there's all this stuff going on in the background, but you're focused on the characters, and the characters drive the story. So I like that. I like the subtlety of it. And it's also uplifting. It's one of those films where it shows the reality of where they live and the challenges they have, but it's inspiring and it's uplifting.
But you find in this one, they seemed a bit more, I guess, like with the other documentaries, they were more open to the camera in some way, but they were still a bit shy. So, you know, they were doing this thing where they were really bold with each other, but, you know, they were shy to be like in front of the camera.
Yes.
So it was very cute, you know, how like that style. So they're not and which kind of like similar to the next film as well, Khartoum Offside by Mara Zain. So it's also from Sudan, made in 2019. It's about a group of exceptional young women in Khartoum are determined to play football professionally. They are prepared to defy the ban imposed by Sudan's Islamic military government, and they won't take no for an answer. So their battle is to get officially recognized as Sudan's national women's team. And their struggle is unwavering. So this is also an intimate portrait of women over the years as we follow their hopes and their moments of hope and deception. So, and despite the National Football Federation getting FIFA funds, you know, for the women's team, their team continues to be marginalized. But they're wanting to say, come and say, you know, we play for Sudan, we want to travel, we want to fly the country flag, even in a country where they're not supposed to be playing football, or they're not supposed to be, you know. So that's, it still has, you know, that camaraderie and that team spirit. So why do you like this film?
It's similarly to Wagga Girls, and I think there've been other films sort of sport related from Africa that deal with similar issues of people being marginalized because of their gender, specifically in soccer in this instance. And I think, like Wagga Girls, it's uplifting and it's inspiring, because these women, despite the religious laws and the restrictions, they're not letting that dampen their spirit, and they're not letting it affect their love and passion for football. So it's just one of those, like, you're rooting for the girls and you want them to get as far as they possibly can and to overturn these patriarchal idiots who just want to, you know, repress them. So it's one of those films where you're just like, you're rooting for the women.
And it's also kind of visually, like, you know, you're seeing this woman play football, and they're giving, you know, playing football with their scarves, and they're fully, you know, that in you know, in attire that is not suited for, it's not supposedly suited for soccer, but they're killing it, you know,
yes.
Using headers, they're, you know, they're, it's, and yeah, and it's positive, it's jovial, but they have a drive, they want to compete, and I guess, and that's the thing about these films as well, is like there's no victim, you know. None of the subjects, none of the characters in this film feel like victims, you know. Even if they're doing things in spite of their governments, they're doing things in spite of their situation, but they all own, you know, they all own their space. And they don't, you know, they're not shown as, they're not portrayed as victims.
Yeah.
Even though they could be, you know. So it's also one of the key things with Africans telling their own stories, is because they don't see it, you know. They don't, mm-hmm. I guess it's a different eye. Somebody coming from outside might say, oh, poor, this is such a sad thing that's happening to you. But someone who lives with you is like, well, you know,
it's life.
Finish doing this. Exactly. What next? You know, like how do you keep pushing? How do you keep, like, you know, hustling, or how do you keep the drive? And that's, you know, that's what is exciting about these films so far. And okay, the good thing, I didn't say there was a number of films. Initially, I was thinking, oh, we'll do like the top 10 for the past 10 years. And then I started, I was like, it's hard to mention 10. So it'll be 10-ish.
Yes.
10 with a bonus. So yes. So now I guess the next kind of jump will be to talk about films that are about our economic realities and our futures. You know, like, what's, I guess the thing about, well, social, economic, political, they're kind of all entwined, and the goal is always to, like, have a better tomorrow. The goal is always, like, how can I get myself out of, how can I improve on this situation? And that's like a common theme across the continent.
Yeah.
With immigration, and I guess this next film is called Chaise Jolie Coiffure. Is wait, you have to tell me the pronunciation. It's because it's French. You know, Rosie is by Rosine is by Rosine Mabakam. So please forgive me if you listen to this and I just like really just mess up the. So let me apologize before mentioning it. Chaise Jolie Coiffure by Rosine Mabakam. She's from Cameroon and Belgium. It was made in 2018, and it's about Sabine. Sabine is a Cameroonian hairdresser who runs the small salon Jolie Coiffure in Matonge district of Brussels. Despite having been in Belgium for almost a decade, she's still awaiting a decision on her asylum application. This intimate portrait captures Sabine's daily life in the salon, perfecting her craft while whiling away time talking and laughing with an eclectic cast of patrons and visitors, many of whom also harbor the same fears about deportation. And it was shot entirely within the confines of the salon. Mabakam's engaged, attentive camera reveals the reality of life in this little known corner of the city. I guess that's what was really interesting for me, that it was so contained, but the film didn't feel claustrophobic at all, because Sabine was such a enigmatic character, you know, and she, so even when she was just like pulling, and I think it was just that pulling hair, you know, like when she kept her like just pulling hair, and that was basically it's so funny. And I love, like, because there's so many, like you see, there's so many immigration stories, you know, and there's so many kind of stories and films about, you know, crossing the borders and being stuck on the water and, you know, the Lebanon and, you know, all of those horrors. And this film managed to capture it was in a way that you were telling the story of a survivor from her mouth, you know, from she was telling her own story, and she didn't feel any kind of sympathies for herself. It was just something that needed to be done, you know, to improve on her, you know, on her life. And even while, you know, she was such a fascinating character. And what do you think about the style in terms of, like, a lot of the times, I guess, like, docs always have to be exploratory. For a film that was so kind of contained, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I have to make a disclosure here. One of my pet peeves is watching a film that takes place in one location. It just, like, I need to see more. But with this film, it's exactly what you say. It's amazing that you get to explore so many different people's lives, so many different stories, about this migration theme in the salon. It's incredible. And you don't ever feel claustrophobic. And I think it is testament to Sabina's, just her character, or the people that pop their heads into the salon, that she just obviously has a great personality. She connects with all these people, they come to her, and it's just sort of in the course of her day that she's just giving us all this information. I really like this film. For the past 3 years now in Afridocs, we've been doing annual themes on migration, and it is all of those stories that you mentioned, people being lost at sea, the sort of horrors of passage to Europe, all of that we see on the news and that you can see on our Afridocs platform at the moment. We're currently doing another migration stories campaign. And this film just is like a bird's eye view on the issues of migration. Like, you get to like really zone in on what people are struggling with, but without all of the drama and you know, the stuff, the nightmarish stuff you see on the news and you hear about all the time. So I think it deals with the issues quite succinctly, and the style of just shooting it in the salon is great. I mean, that's kind of where everybody spills their secrets, don't they, when they're getting their hair done. So, yeah.
What is it about, like, black woman salons, I like, you know, and having all the tea and everybody's secrets. And I think that's probably like a source that, like, going forward, that should be like the source for documentary. Like, sit in the salon and just like get all the information, get you know,
exactly.
You know, who is married to who left who, you know, like what's going on.
It's an idea for your next film.
it is. I mean, it'll be a source, right? Yes, just to go sit there and find out what's going on and get the pulse.
Yeah.
And she was able, like you said, Sabine was kind of able to draw conversation, and people were able to speak to her. She was very, you know, she was very direct. She was able to speak for herself. And you know, there was and it just kind of captured everything, because even when, you know, there were a few people that were passing by and taking pictures of her, and she said, you know, she said something about, you know, we paid to go to your zoos, you know. So it was very so it's and still not feeling at home, you know, not feeling like you could go out to Christmas, you know, you could have plans for Christmas, or you know. And so yes, I was saying that she was such a engaging subject, and people were able to kind of converse with her, and she was able to kind of talk to other people. And it's a very, I guess, it's a kinder approach, you know, it's a kinder approach to this the topic of migration. And there was a point in the documentary where people were taking pictures of them in the salon, and she said something about, you know, we paid to go to your zoos. And it's also that not feeling at home, you know, because you're not settled, because she still hadn't gotten her papers. But yes, but still very, very, very hopeful, not, you know, not, and engaging. It was a very kind of interesting documentary and interesting take.
Yeah.
So, okay, moving on to No Gold for Kasalka. This is also from Burkina Faso by Michel Zongo. When the government of Burkina Faso starts to issue mining permits in 2000, gold fever strikes. In 2008, a British mining company starts the first open pit mine in Kasalka, digging away the soil that's vital to villagers' lives. It's not long before the first kilogram of gold has been mined from a reserve at 18 metric tons. The people of Kasalka are promised mountains of gold, jobs for the villagers, scholarships for their children, money from the government, and development aid for the next 10 years. But 6 years later, all that's happened is that mountains of gold have been taken away from them, and they're left with nothing but polluted land. We were ignorant, but now they're seeking justice.
I mean, it's kind of an age-old story of big multinationals coming in, making promises, and exploiting resources and people. It's a story the African people know very well.
Yeah. So, but it's I was very angry, you know, when I watched that film. I was angry because, you know, for Burkina Faso is their goal, but this is 2000. This is literally just 20 years ago. I mean, in Nigeria, it was the oil. In some other places, you know, all the natural resources. And going out without any kind of refinement, coming back in more expensive. So is this, is still this kind of like economic, for now is the government, is, you know, multinationals working with the country's government, and everybody's getting rich, but, you know, but the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very story of our lives moment.
Yeah.
You know, very,
absolutely. But also a little bit of inspiration there that, they're not sort of just going to lie down and take it now. They're wanting justice.
Yeah.
And this film is by a man.
It's a great film. Yeah. Finally. it's a good film. You know, it's very, I guess, it's basically the kind of film that makes us like hold a mirror to ourselves, right? And the idea is as the people, we should get angry, or you know, we should do more, or we should protect ourselves, or we should get more information, because now, you know, the land is useless mm-hmm. for them, and you know, and the gold is gone, and who to hold, you know, to us. And it's interesting because they're still kind of finding more natural resources in on the continent. So it's this would be good for people to kind of like watch and see, you know, that it's not even it's not history. This is not like history. This is not mm-hmm. something that happened in the 90s or in the 1800s, so in the early 1900s. This is still happening in 2020.
Yeah.
So that's a good
a good reminder.
Yes, it's a good reminder. And yeah, so it's for the people, but it's great to watch. And also talking about activism.
Yes.
And people taking up, you know, the mantle, and people taking up saying that enough is enough. So we go on to Softy by Sam Sokol, which is also another male filmmaker from Kenya. And this is his debut. This is his first feature documentary from Sam Sokol. So it talks about, it's the story of Boniface. Boniface Softy Mwangi has long fought injustice in his country as a political activist. Now he's taking the next step by running for office in a regional Kenyan election. From the moment Boniface decides to run, telling his wife and Jerry in passing with a hesitant laugh, he responds to each challenge with optimism. But running a clean campaign against corrupt opponents becomes increasingly harder to combat with idealism alone. And Boniface soon finds that challenging strong political dynasties is putting his family at risk. Should country really come before family, as is always believed?
This is another favorite of mine for 2020. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this for inspiration. This guy is incredible. And I think it's like, it's more than just, it's the story of somebody who believes and will fight for his country no matter what. And that kind of passion and drive and resilience is admirable. It's just, it's incredible. But it's that, and that's a big deal in the film. It's huge, the activism, the struggles, the sacrifices that he makes. But there's also the love story with his wife, their love, and that, I guess, sort of keeps him going. You know, there's that part in the film where they're separated and he needs her because she kind of keeps him going. It's, I don't know, I mean, I watched this film, but I just felt so embarrassed for myself for not doing anything in terms of activism. It's just like, it just makes you want to go and do something. You just feel so bad for being like a normal human being, just getting on with your life and not making any difference.
But just tweeting and making like Facebook posts, let me have some coffee. But yes, but I guess it's, but he's, but on the other end, like, he's surrendering everything. Like, it's like, it's at what cost, you know? Like, the love for his country is, and he's ready to give up everything, you know, his family, mm-hmm. you know, it's scary, you know, to have that kind of passion, like to have that kind of, and then for your country, you know, yes. Like it's almost like, you know, is it worth it, you know, is it like, it's, I don't know,
I think there's also, you know? Yeah, there's also a part in the film where I think his wife sort of questions that about, like, what happens if you die, and he says something about, you know, then at least I will have made a difference, and then she's like, well, if you know, if you're dead, will you make a difference? And it's, you know, it's that how do you balance that? I think the real activists out there, they are the sacrifices that they have to make. You can't have everything, and sometimes doing, you know, sacrificing all of this for your country is, you know, if there weren't people like him, what would the world be like? Would just be us doing our social media activism.
Yeah, but then why? I guess the question is why? Everybody sees that, you know, he's this great guy. He means well. He's the activist. So why are the people not resonating? Like, why can't, you know, it's yeah. still, I guess it's still a concern to us, right? So if we find, if we, why do we still kind of vote the way we do? Why do we, like, you know, why do we make the choices that we make as citizens, you know? So there's the, it's, but yeah, and his wife and Jerry in this is also kind of like the heart of this film, mm-hmm. you know, because she's also, you know, she's also, you know, she's also an activist, also strong, but able to kind of like balance, I guess a bit better.
Yeah.
Than he does. But yes, but you can see that she's also, you know, very passionate. And it's a lovely, it's a very timely film. You know?
Yes.
It's even, you know, even with the current, you know, wave of, you know, politics that's going on around the world. So it's basically a film that's everybody, like it's important for everybody to watch. Like,
yeah.
It's not, I guess political systems across the world are corrupted,
mm-hmm.
you know, and elections are, political financing is corrupted, you know, so it's not an African thing. It's not, it's everywhere around the world. So
yeah.
it's a very important film.
It's sad that the corruption, films about corruption resonate so much with everybody, but I guess that's our reality.
Okay, so moving on to, I guess, this part, well, it's, I call it legacy, but, you know, I don't know. So there's a film called, so this film, it was made in 2019, also from Kenya. I just want to stop before I even go on and say, the films coming out of East Africa, the documentary films coming out of East Africa in the past 3 to 5 years, has been, you know, amazing. So there's something in the water there, in the air, on the mountains, that's happening with the filmmakers there. But I guess there's also DocuBox,
yes.
know, and, you know, having access to financing, which goes to what you say about how can we make it sustainable. And so we can see there's so many kind of films coming out of, I think this is my third film from Kenya.
Yeah, I think this is it. I think there's a good film community there. I mean, I'm not so sure about the funding and which avenues they have access to or what's different about East Africa. But like you say, there is DocuBox, and it just seems to me like there's a good community going, and that they're able to network, and there are opportunities for training and development. So yeah, it's really paying off.
Yeah. So this film is also from Kenya. It's called The Letter by Maya Liko and her husband Christopher King. And basically, Carissa's city life is interrupted when his grandma back home is called the witch and receives a death threat. So he returns to his rural village to investigate, and he finds a frenzied mixture of consumerism and Christianity. Christianity is turning hundreds of families against their elders, branding them as witches as a means to steal their ancestral land. As Carissa delicately navigates between his disputing aunties and uncles, the love for his grandmother and her fearless spirits must overcome the imminent danger of the accusations against her.
Wow.
This film was everything. Like, I loved it so much. And it's the melting pot of everything, you know. It's basically where everything comes home to roost, you know. And it's the family. So I guess if the family unit itself is broken, then where do we go from there, you know? How do we kick off from there? Because this is within a family. And there's infighting, and they're trying to take, so this what happens in the region is they send letters back, and they call their elder ones witches so they can come and claim their land. Then there's the community where they're banished to if they're not killed, and, you know, blame them for everything, you know, whether it's infertility or, you know, problems with their businesses. So yeah, so how do you start?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that are going on here. I mean, there's the modern day witch hunt that's happening. There's, I guess, economic desperation that's forcing the children of these so-called witches to employ these superstitious tactics to get rid of their elders, or, you know, just being, you know, finding ways of manipulating the situation in their favor. There's religion that plays a part. And again, this film, the grandmother and the grandson, I mean, these characters are excellent. That grandmother, your heart just sort of opens up for her. And the whole time during the film, you're sort of like on tenterhooks, hoping that she doesn't get killed. It's just, there's so many things, and I think the story itself, again, is quite a, the way that the filmmakers have dealt with it, is quite a small story. They don't kind of attempt to deal with all of the issues, but just kind of in their way through the grandmother's story, highlight the things that are happening in her world, and so are the important issues of the region. I mean, it's incredible, this witch hunt, and, you know, it's ridiculous. So, you know, how can you get evidence to support this? And it's I got really angry watching this film, just so afraid for the grandmother, but also so angry at these kids that were trying to use this superstition to enrich their lives and to steal land away from the grandmother.
Happy little kids. So these are like, you know, adults.
Yeah.
You know, respected in the society, like uncles. And I guess I thought, like, you know, the one thing going for, like, the one thing I know, like, across the continent is, you know, we have respect for our elders. You know, I thought if there's one thing we get right,
yeah.
We get the respect right, you know. We get, like, that's where even, like, maybe a bit too respectful, you know.
Yeah.
It's just to kind of, like, have this situation where they're being witch hunted, and it's mainly economical, you know. It's basically access to land, access to, you know, inheritance, things like that. So I guess it also shows, but yes, I guess the way they had told the story and not made it like didn't go too in depth into the issue, it feels like a film that you could take back into the community, mm-hmm. and it could, same thing, hold a mirror to themselves and they could watch it. So I guess, like, there's also, like, that gaze that kind of runs across, like, all of the films that we mentioned, like where you make a film, but just not just making an African film by an African filmmaker, but you're making it even for an African audience,
mm-hmm.
and have them being able to watch, to go back and watch those films and see themselves, but not see themselves, you know, there's some self-reflection, but it doesn't feel judgmental.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because in this film, you know, the family is there, they're talking, and, you know, I don't know how self-reflective they would be, you know, because in them, I guess, like, they still believe what they believe, and how do you change your mindset? How do you, like, start to tackle that? I guess
you just talk and talk and talk and hope that something resonates for somebody to make them just consider what their worldview's been. I mean, I think it was also interesting that in this accusation against the grandmother, that it was pretty much the male children who were accusing her of being a witch, and her daughters were seemingly on her side. It was just an observation that maybe, you know, the sort of patriarchal idea of land being owned by men, or another issue to explore.
Yeah, but the other there's the And there's also the question of, I guess, like, you know, like there's something that she said about her kind of like writing a will, or and her daughter was saying, you know, but if you tell her to write a will, it's like you're telling her that you're ready for her to die. And that's like an interesting thing, because I know, like, you can't kind of mention a will. It's almost like a taboo. It's not a responsible legal document. It's like, oh, you're planning something for me, right? That's why you want me to write down what I have. so it was so interesting, because I cut that and I was like, yes, that's
it rings
true.
You can't
really. It's taboo to talk about things like that. So it's very interesting. I mean, we started out saying like Africa. I mean, we started this podcast saying Africa is a continent, but now it's almost like Africa is a country, you know?
We're regressing here, Chioma.
Exactly. As we're going through. So yes. Then finally, I guess this is like a bonus film to watch. Because of course you have to make a documentary that talks about other films. Wrapping up. and I guess like that's the great thing about this film. Like there's always, I guess it's maybe that's a Hollywood thing. You know, when you make a film about Hollywood, then it becomes like it wins awards and everything, because they like to see themselves. In this case, this documentary is called Semben. By Samba Gajingo, Semben by Samba Gajingo and Jason Silverman. It's from Senegal in 2015, and it's about Ousmane Semben. So in 1952, Ousmane Semben, a dock worker and fifth grade dropout from Senegal, began to dream an impossible dream, to become a storyteller for a new Africa. And Semben tells his story, the father of African cinema. He's a self-taught novelist and filmmaker who fought against all odds to give African stories to Africa, and is told through the experience of Samba, who's his colleague that knows him really well, with the archival footage, with film footages of his film, and it just talks about an ordinary man, even like, and obviously talks about his own kind of failings or his controversies, even as a man. But it was. I mean, for. I guess it's in closing with this is basically like the advice is to, you know, watch it captures basically the spirit of this podcast and about Africans telling their own stories. And if Africa doesn't, there's a quote there that if Africa doesn't tell their own story, Africa will disappear. And it's I mean, Semben is Semben, he's known as the father of African cinema. He basically made films that started to travel. You know, he was at Cannes Film Festival. He kicked off, you know, this kind of movement. And what many people who did for the continent. So it's a great documentary that really kind of talks about like his life. And I think what was sad to me, like even which is what kind of like happens as well, is, you know, when he first goes back to his office, Samba. And he sees that like all of his films have like rotted, and they had, you know, they're rusty and not yet have been unkept. So he had to start like restoring, you know, all of these things. It's also about how we treat the things that are important to us, you know, as on the continent, how we preserve information, how we preserve like legacy. I guess so this is a really good film for that, because we don't have enough biographies. We don't have enough, you know. Everything is, you know, we're very kind of secretive even with people who have been successful. It's always, you know, if they don't attribute it to religion or, you know, so nobody's kind of like, oh, is telling us, you know, this is how they did things and this is how it should be done. And so, yeah, so I guess this is a good film about film.
Yeah, I think it's also important for us to celebrate African filmmakers, and so not only the greats like the father of African cinema, but the African filmmakers. That there's so many that have been mentors to younger filmmakers that you know, that people don't even know about. And because they don't get the kind of exposure that Western filmmakers do. So it's up to us to showcase those films and those filmmakers and to provide platforms for their work to be known.
So what's coming up for you now with AfriDocs? What's coming up in the documentary space?
Okay, so like I mentioned, we're currently doing a migration campaign, which is happening right now. And then, as you know, I work at Steps, and we're producing Generation Africa, which is something you know quite a bit about. And this is going to be a collection of films that has a distinctly African voice. All of the filmmakers are African, and the narrative is African, and I'm excited about it. I cannot wait for these films to be finished so that we can have them on AfriDocs and share them across the continent. And damn COVID-19, because that's put a pause on a lot of the productions, but we'll get there eventually. So that's very exciting. And then, you know, I'm just always constantly on the lookout for new films by African filmmakers. We want to populate this platform and just show off the crazy talent that Africa has.
Thank you. I mean, thank you for your work and for what you're doing with African films. Generation in Africa, of course, is close to my heart because I'm also a part of it. But it's basically 30 films about migration. And it's going to tackle the topic of migration. And there's so much happening on the continent now. And it's important that we take ownership of the films and of the stories, because what could possibly happen is the same thing that has been happening, and you know, there would be a pillage, and even though there's a pillage of kind of resources and everything, we still have, you know, we're here and we want to continue telling the stories. So thank you thank you so much. Thank you so much, Theresa. Thank you for coming on with this. Thank you to Lucy of Grammar of Color Collective. Thank you, Anne and Bridget, for organizing and sending emails and putting this together. And thank you to the technical team that would edit and put some music on and make my voice even sexier. And let me just thank all the other curators. It's 4 parts, so it'll be all interesting. And thank you to Doc Lives, like, for putting this together, for commissioning, for curating, for bringing us together to talk about African films and to celebrate African filmmakers. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.